Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Monday afternoon, November 18th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The Mike Tyson-Jake Paul boxing live stream was a record setter for Netflix, but it also suffered major technical issues. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, a busy week ahead on Wall Street includes an update on the housing market. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like housing will dominate the data coming out today, starting with home builder confidence, which got a post-election boost, and why are home builders feeling better in the wake of the election nearly 2 weeks ago?
Well, hi, Rob. The home builders are expecting that demand will increase. They're also looking forward to lower mortgage rates. Unfortunately, those mortgage rates really haven't fallen since the election. As long as long-term yields are going to stay high like this, then there's not going to be really that much room for mortgage rates to fall. So we'll have to see how that develops.
And then we have housing starts and building permits, and that's coming out later this week. And you mentioned that mortgage rates and especially the 10-year yield serving as a real headwind for any improvement in the housing market. But how do things look on the, when it comes to actually building homes for people to buy?
I mean, the new homes part of the business has done okay. The problem has been that that's only about 10% of the market, and 90% is existing home sales. And when you look at existing home sales, well, there's just so many people who refinanced mortgages 3-4 years ago when rates were 2-2.5-3%. If those folks are going to sell now and go and buy someplace else with a mortgage, they're going to be paying 7.5%. So that arithmetic just doesn't add up. And what you're seeing is very few homes being offered for sale. That drives prices higher, and it makes it harder for everybody to afford homes.
And then speaking of existing home sales, we have that number coming out on Thursday. And is the consensus for that number to continue to look bleak?
It's going to be a little bit of a rebound after the 1% decline last month. So we're looking at October data. September was down minus 1%. October is expected at this point to be up just around 3%. That's not a great number, but it's just a series that's been languishing. Existing home sales really have done nothing.
And then Friday, we get consumer sentiment, and there has been some discourse, Paul, in the wake of the election that consumer confidence and consumer sentiment figures are really being weighted by partisanship. And your kind of perception of the economy, your perception of your purchasing power as a consumer is colored by whether or not you believe the president you support is in the White House. So will there be a Trump impact on consumer sentiment coming Friday?
That's always a possibility. And sure, there are people who are disappointed, and that disappointment extends to their economic prospects since the election. And then there's going to be people who are feeling good since the election, and they're going to feel like their prospects going forward are even better. But in point of fact, if you look at the consumer sentiment, from the University of Michigan, the expectations for the next 6 months have been gradually climbing since they bottomed out in the middle of 2022 with inflation at 9%. And so that increase has already been there. That trend higher has already been there. We think it maybe has more to do with rising wages, the fact that inflation has fallen below wage growth, so you're getting an increase in your real purchasing power every month. And now on top of that, interest rates are starting to fall, the prime rate's starting to fall, credit is more available to households and to small businesses. So those factors look like they're more important, and they've been around for longer.
Paul Christopher, Head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, Netflix prepares for the NFL after a major boxing broadcast that had some buffering problems.
It's discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
After a record-breaking Mike Tyson-Jake Paul boxing live stream, Netflix has its sights set on the NFL. Let's discuss this huge move with Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group in Chicago. Tim, thank you for joining us today. And first off, let me say there was something about this Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight which was refreshingly old school in that it was one of the very few events that everybody was talking about. You could start a conversation with anybody saying, "You see the fight last night?" I mean, my daughter, who's 11, she said her classmates at school were talking about it. Complete strangers were talking about it. And in this world of everybody living in a silo, it was nice to have one event that everybody could talk about.
Ironically, though, it was probably something that could have been better presented in a broadcast television environment, right? Because given all the hiccups and the buffering issues and the various technological snafus that a majority of people had issues with, I find it highly ironic that an event of this magnitude could have been technically served better, if you will, through more traditional over-the-air broadcast television type technology behind it. But that is where streaming is today, and live sports is hard. Live sports is very hard, and to do it concurrently in a streaming environment is even harder than that. But no question, as an event, as a spectacle, it's probably the event that I guess Americans deserved in many respects.
Well, I mean, watching the fight itself, because I managed to get it to work, and all I could think of is friends of mine who are real boxing fans who follow the sweet science, and how insulting that fight must have been, because the fight quality was very poor, and it was rough to see, you know, Mike Tyson, who was a fighter who was just so electrifying in his prime, in that shape on Friday night. But Netflix says it was 65 million concurrent streams, and for a lot of people, that just meant you were looking at a red circle going round and round. And what does that mean for their efforts to air the NFL?
Well, I you know, again, live television is hard generally. Live events and sports in streaming is even harder still. I think you have to remember that this is an event that was streamed globally in many different countries in live and in streamed fashion, right? The NFL games, ironically, are going to be actually lesser of a stretch or a stressor for this system. I mean, no question the NFL is going to get millions of viewers, but it's not going to be on the order of magnitude that this international fight was. And you were looking for a comparison. I mean, Prime Video's presentation of Thursday Night Football is generating roughly what a cable network would have gotten in previous generations. So we're talking maybe 10 to 20 million, perhaps, of concurrent streaming, which is about a third, maybe, arguably, of what this fight just generated. So in theory, this should be an easier layup, if you will, to mix metaphors for their coverage of the NFL's Christmas games.
Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a low-cost air carrier files for bankruptcy protection, but it will continue to fly.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Spirit Airlines has now filed for bankruptcy, but the CEO is reassuring travelers the airline will continue operations. Joining us with the latest is Hannah Sampson, travel writer for The Washington Post. Hannah, thank you for joining us today. Now, Spirit the writing was on the wall for a couple of weeks that Spirit was going to file for Chapter 11, but the fact that they will continue flying and not shut down entirely, Hannah, is that an indication that maybe that merger with Frontier is back on the table and a real possibility?
You know, someone actually floated that idea to me, especially since we're be moving into a new presidential administration next year. They suggested maybe the environment will be a little friendlier for that kind of activity. It's unclear, though. They haven't really said that today. But it's not unusual for an airline to file for bankruptcy. We've seen the big ones, the major ones, all do it and emerge on the other side. So it could be that they are able to reduce their debt, restructure their finances, and come out a sleeker airline that can go it alone, or, you know, or TBA. We'll see what happens.
And this was kind of a tortured process that led us to this particular filing, and that was several years ago. Spirit wanted to merge with Frontier, and then JetBlue flew in, no pun intended, and put a better offer on the table. That offer to merge was scotched by federal regulators in the Biden administration, which was looking very poorly upon consolidation. And so did that kind of tortured merger process burn up a lot of money that Spirit could have otherwise used for operations?
Yeah, it's been a real drama. It's been a real roller coaster for the last couple of years. And one expert who we talked to did make the point that Spirit had put a lot of their focus in these merger efforts, first with Frontier, then moving on to JetBlue, like you said. And that's what they were focusing on, as opposed to solely focusing on how to make the business healthier and how to do all of the things that they needed to do in order to survive. So, you know, it now is kind of coming around to bite them, because they had this debt that was coming due, and they have these engine problems that are forcing them to ground planes. And it seems apparent that they just didn't have any other option at this point.
When it's all said and done, are we going to be looking at a Spirit Airlines that's either folded into Frontier, which is a distinct possibility, especially with the change of administrations coming to Washington, or just a slimmed down airline, a slimmed down Spirit that just serves leisure destinations?
I definitely think the first thing we're going to see is a slimmed down airline. That's what basically the analysts who we spoke to said they expect to see. If you have a favorite route, they're probably going to be looking at that and saying, does this make money for us? Are we keeping this? That's kind of part of the process that they'll be going through, deciding what they're going to keep, deciding what the right size is and how they'll move forward. And then, you know, what happens once they emerge from that TBA? They did say they expect to be done by the first quarter of next year. So, you know, we shouldn't be on the edge of our seats for too long to find out what happens next.
Hanna Sampson, travel writer, The Washington Post, thank you for joining us today to talk about the issues at Spirit Airlines, the carrier with the yellow planes operating in the red, filing for bankruptcy today. Still ahead, more college grads are heading back home before heading out on their own.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Mourners gather for the funeral of Chicago police officer Enrique Martinez. There's controversy over another one of President-elect Trump's cabinet choices. A greater number of young adults are delaying moving out of their parents' house. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of suggestions from an investing pro. WBBM Business. The markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 53 points. The NASDAQ is up 118, and the S&P 500 is up 24. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, cloudy, breezy, mild periods of rain and a high of 59. We have 55 degrees with rain right now. At 12:31, topping our news at the half hour, the funeral service for Chicago police officer Enrique Martinez is taking place today. A procession carried his body from the Blake Lamb Funeral Home at 103rd and Cicero in Oak Lawn to St. Rita of Cassia Shrine Chapel at 77th and Western in Chicago. Martinez was 26. He was killed during a traffic stop in the East Chatham neighborhood 2 weeks ago. President-elect Trump's cabinet picks continue to draw strong reaction. This is CBS News political correspondent Caitlin Huey Burns.
Over the weekend, Trump tapped Chris Wright, a fracking company CEO and an opponent of efforts to fight climate change, to lead the Department of Energy.
There is no climate crisis, and we're not in the midst of an energy transition either.
The president-elect still has to announce his choices to lead the departments of Treasury, Commerce, Education, and Transportation. Markets are mixed right now at 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And among the market movers this week may be the market mover, Michael, and that is NVIDIA reporting its quarterly earnings report, and that is such a biggie now. I mean, it's up there with maybe a jobs report or a Fed announcement in terms of its potential to move the markets.
Fred, me on. So it probably is now the bellwether or the biggest earnings report of the season. It happens to come at the end of the season too, where almost everything else is out. You know, you're talking about a company that is now a $3.5 trillion company, which is tied with Apple for the largest companies in the United States. So it's not only in size but also in growth. The stock is now looked at more than maybe any stock in the country. And so we've got earnings Wednesday, you know, sales expected around $33 billion, earnings 74 cents. These numbers to me, I mean, they matter, but really it's always going to be in these high growth names, it's going to be what the CEO says about the future prospects. So it's way more important to listen to the conference call after the earnings are announced than to look at the numbers just straight away.
And this is NVIDIA still priced for perfection, as they say? Like, any sign of a wobble, even a hint of a wobble, would that be enough to get people to sell?
Well, I'm an old options trader, so this stock has is gigantic, what they call skew. And what that means is it's likely to go up, but the chance of the big move is to the downside. It's not priced for perfection, but it's certainly priced for incredible continued success. So you've got, I mean, next year's sales, it's priced 20 times next year's sales. That's a crazy number. But if you look at earnings, it's only 36 times forward earnings. That's because this company has such a huge margin. So it really has got such an intellectual advantage over all of its competitors. So when you look at it times earnings, it's a believable number. It's just that as companies get bigger, the growth rates just come down. It's impossible for trees to grow to the sky. So we'll have to see. It definitely can still go up. But as you said, I don't agree with price for perfection, but it's priced to be continued incredible success. Any hiccup at all, any earnings per share, even around where it projects, or a hint from the CEO that the stock growth rate is going to come down, and this stock is going to go down 20, 30, 40%. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but we don't have a position in it, and that's why we don't. There's plenty of other names out there to play that don't have this kind of downside possibilities, so we just decide not to play this one.
Another story stock today is Tesla. Shares rallying on news that the incoming administration is going to ease regulation on self-driving vehicles. And above and beyond the benefit for Tesla, which has been really developing that technology, is that the nudge the entire space is going to need? Because right now, self-driving cars are limited to taxi services and only on the West Coast or portions of the Southwest.
Yeah, well, the administration, and I get, you know, President Trump wants to push technology further. He wants to grow the economy, and we've grown in the past, especially in the last 30 years, through technology. But we have to be super careful in this exact area, because when you're talking about self-driving cars, the largest, I'll give you a quiz here, Rob. What do you think is the largest employer of people in the country?
It is the trucking industry, if I recall.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you. I put you on the spot there and you nailed it. So how about if we have the entire trucking industry out of work because we have self-driving trucks? That would be a disaster. So I think Trump has got to weigh that. I'm sure he is, but he's got to weigh that with pushing technology, because we can't put 20, 30 million people out of work when we've already had incredible turnover because of technology already. So we have to be careful in that area. That's all I'm going to say about it. We have too many people that depend on driving as a business. And so I'm a little skeptical and a little worried about that exact space. Elon Musk has done a lot of great things for our economy, but this is one area that we have to be just super careful.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, more young people are choosing not to leave the nest. We'll talk about that next.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A survey by Bank of America finds around 1 in 3 adults ages 18 to 34 are living with at least one of their parents. Let's discuss the dynamics with Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Chris, thank you for joining us today. How much of this is just simply a function of younger people having a hard time coping with the higher cost of living, and how much of this is a function of kids who really just need a nudge to move out?
You know, it really depends on the kid and the family. I find that just like mama birds that push their birds out of the nest so that they could, you know, sprout those wings and make them work, most of us have to have our kids go out and figure out how to do it. If not, we run the risk of them thinking that they're not capable. Like, if we keep defending them, keep taking care of them, keep providing for them, then maybe they start to feel like they're not competent. There's a portion of folks that fall into that category. There's obviously a portion of people that really just need to stay home for a variety of other health reasons, maybe family or what have you. So I think it just depends on what's going on in the family. I have the privilege of working with clients who must share everything in their life that has a dollar sign connected to it, the good, the bad, the sometimes ugly. And so when we get to look at all of their finances, we can see what's affordable. And for those folks that really can't afford subsidizing their child's growth and development after college, they can see it in black and white right in front of them. And then it's a different conversation. You know, hey, honey, you got to go stand on your own. Or maybe you have to help more in the family household. I have other folks that have tons of money and wherewithal, and they're still helping their children. And so it's a question of, do they need to stay there? Are you helicoptering them too much so that they're not able to get their own land legs, so to speak? Does that make some sense?
It does, but also, I guess, in terms of the living at home situation, I mean, it happened to me when I moved back to Chicago from a different city. I moved back to officially to my old room was waiting for me when I moved from Milwaukee to Chicago 20 years ago. But it allowed me to stay home for like 4 or 5 months, save up, and then I was out of there in April and living on my own once again. But it was just simply a function of I didn't want to do an apartment search. In November and December, it was much easier in the spring. And I was working the entire time. So how many of these kids who are staying at their parents' house are also unemployed? Or are they at home saving up and to move out later on?
Well, again, we had kids bounce back right after college, too, which made sense. It was short term. There was never an expectation that they would stay there for the rest of their lives. And it allowed them to save money and to have stronger land legs when they did finally launch and go out on their own. It really just depends, Rob, on what's happening.
Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for Healthy Retirement. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday and still to come, our Monday afternoon stock picker.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday. Helping us out today is Matt Shapiro, president MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us on this Stock Picker Monday. And housing seems to be the theme of this particular program, talking about the price of rent, but also the prospects for the home building and home owning spaces in the new year. And that dovetails very nicely into your first stock selection today.
Oh, thank you, Rob. Louisiana Pacific, which is basically the largest manufacturer of wood siding for new houses and, you know, replacement and everything like that. The stock's about $115. It's been it's a smaller company, medium-sized, mid-cap company. You know, really, as you talked about earlier in the program, the story is U.S. housing starts, which are at an annual rate of about 1.3 million, but still relatively depressed from historical averages. And of course, there's a shortfall of about 20 million housing units that need to be built over the next few years. Obviously, that was a campaign issue, and all sorts of trends and incentives for new housing, you know, notwithstanding interest rates, will definitely play into the bottom line of Louisiana Pacific as they sell more siding.
And your next selection is from the public utility space, and also fairly timely given the hot summer they experienced in the Southwest.
Yes, Pinnacle West, which is the major Arizona utility, and there was a record 113 days above 100 degrees in Phoenix, which is just, of course, evidence of, you know, climate change. Pinnacle West is the major utility there. They own and operate, they own about 30% of the largest nuclear power station in the United States, Palo Verde, and the electric transmission station. So very centrally located. The stock's done very well today, this year, has a dividend of about 4%. And as everyone knows, the demand for artificial intelligence is really pulling utility stocks ever higher. Obviously, Pinnacle West owns, you know, substantial amounts of nuclear assets. And in their recent earnings report, of course, they referenced increasing business expenditures for artificial intelligence and data centers.
It's also interesting, Matt, that both of your selections are growth oriented and inside discussions that have been taking place when it comes to curbing the high cost of living. And that is especially on the housing front, because homes are expensive thanks to mortgage rates. Apartment rents are expensive. And there's a big policy discussion that's really come out since the election of trying to build more housing in more places, because it seems like the bulk of the housing construction is in Texas and Georgia and Florida and not so much in California.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, these two things go together, you know, which is housing growth, utility growth, more electricity demand, more electric cars, things like that. So these are really sort of breadbasket kind of companies, even though they're not bigger, they're not your Amazons, they're really keyed into the economy. And that's why we feel, you know, investors are going to be in a solid situation that can benefit from these, you know, housing demand that's really important for us to solve and build so much.
Matt Shapiro, president, MWS Capital in Chicago. Thank you for joining us on Stock Picker Monday. His selections this week, Louisiana Pacific Corporation, LPX, and Pinnacle West Capital Corporation, PNW.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.